You're listening to the Divorce and Your Money Show, the number one podcast that discusses the complex business of divorce. I'm your host, Sean Lehman, MBA and certified divorce financial analyst. You can visit us at divorceandyourmoney.com. Today, we have a very special interview, and actually this one comes from you. One of the show listeners recommended this guest. She wanted to hear more about collaborative divorce. And what she did, she emailed me. My email address is Sean, S-H-A-W-N, at divorceandyourmoney.com. And this particular guest said, hey, can we get a collaborative divorce expert on the show? I want to hear more about that process. And she also emailed me some other guest ideas. And actually, you'll be hearing from some other guest area suggestions that she sent. And anyone can do this. So if you have a topic that I haven't covered or something you want to learn more about, just email me, Sean, S-H-A-W-N, at divorceandyourmoney.com. Look, I read and respond to everyone and try to help the best I can. Now, this listener said, you know what, I'm deciding upon collaborative divorce, I think, but you know, I just want to hear more about the process and make sure that this is the path that's right for me. And she emailed this to me several weeks ago, and I said, hey, I'm on it. I'm trying to find a good guest. And in fact, she said, well, you know what? I know a good guest near where I am in the country, in Oregon. And I said, oh, that's interesting. Do you mind if I contact this attorney? And she said, no problem. And so today, we get to hear from Tanya Alexander, a collaborative attorney and mediator based out of the Portland, Oregon area. And she's going to give us, Tanya is going to give us an overview of collaborative divorce. And it's a very specific divorce process, and she's going to get into that. But the reason I want you to be aware of it is if you haven't chosen the way that you're going to get divorced, and there are multiple ways to get divorced, you don't necessarily have to litigate and fight it out with your soon-to-be ex-spouse. And collaborative divorce is one of the processes that generally leads to the best long-term outcome for people. And I don't just mean financial outcome. I also mean from the perspective of maintaining relationships with your kids, a long-term relationship with your ex-spouse, and just kind of keeping a family intact. Because collaborative divorce can avoid a lot of the fighting that's involved in the traditional divorce process. Now, of course, many of us know this, is that collaborative divorce won't work for everyone. And, you know, if there's abuse or mental issues or just you just can't stand the idea of working in the same room or working closely with your spouse to get this over with, well, might not be a process for you. And I know a lot of cases where it's just not feasible. I work with a lot of you where you just can't work in a collaborative divorce process, but a lot of you can. And if you can use this method to get divorced, I highly recommend it. And we're going to have this interview with Tanya so you can learn more about collaborative divorce, what it means, and how it works. So listen to this great interview. Today on the show, we have Tanya Alexander, collaborative attorney and mediator. Tanya, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Sean. I'm delighted to talk to you and your audience. One of my clients is a huge fan, and you have helped her a lot, so I'd love to spread more awareness.
I'm so glad to hear that. But before we jump in and get deep on collaborative divorce and collaborative law, why don't you give us your background, where you are, and a little bit about your practice?
Sure. I am sitting here in rainy Portland, Oregon. I've been practicing law about 16 years. Before that, I got an undergraduate in finance, so I had a good sense of numbers. And then I was a child of several divorces, three.
Oh, wow.
And so I really always had a passion for helping families and knew right from the get-go, even before law school, that I wanted to continue in some way helping families. So I have been exclusively practicing family law since then, and also half my practice is mediation.
Got it. And so I have a guess that some of your family history growing up has an impact on how you chose to get into the collaborative world and mediation.
You know, it did. It was really traumatic, I think, as a child having a custody battle over my sister. It was a relocation case, very adversarial, and went through 2 years of the litigation process. And I actually lost my whole education fund. My dad, you had to use to try to prevent that move. And he did not prevail. And I lost my little sister. So that was an impact, but it was also an impact seeing my dad make poor decisions in each divorce without advice from a financial specialist like Sean or a caring attorney. And so my whole focus is to help each family decide, you know, is collaborative a good fit? If not, what are some resources that they can use to hopefully avoid trial?
Let's get into that. What is, you know, collaborative law generally and collaborative divorce? Why does it exist? And tell us how it's different from the traditional process that most people know.
Really great questions. And there are a lot of myths out there. And so I know we only have a few minutes, but I think what's important to remember is that the word collaborative is an adjective. So we call that small c, collaborative. If someone's just being nice and wanting to collaborate with others, well, that's all good. You know, a potential participant, a client, would want to always interview professionals and ask, what do you mean by collaborative? What am I signing up for? Have you been trained? Is this, you know, exactly what you said, Sean, is this different? And because a lot of marketing is being done right now, as it is a kind of a trendy buzzword to be collaborative. But what collaborative law really is it's a set of protocols that all participants, including, let's say we had Sean as a neutral certified divorce financial analyst, myself as an attorney, and then we might have a child specialist helping with the children's voice. We might have a divorce coach if there's some emotional sensitivities or different needs. And I won't ramble on about different team members, but the point being, all participants are committed to helping the family. So being a resource, not setting up for court, you're working toward clients' goals and trying to find those areas where both people find it acceptable and there's no pressure. It's not under the threat of court. So in other words, the clients are in control of the process and we're just there as, I like to say Sherpas, you know, it sounds silly, but we're guides and just providing education and information. That's wholly different from in traditional litigation. You may have heard the phrase zealous advocacy. That gets taken to the extreme. And unfortunately, I think the problem lies with, not to beat up on law schools too much or the media, but, you know, people tend to get really afraid when they're served. And so that's an example where in mediation and collaborative work, we would never think of serving someone that's not required. Certainly transparency and notices, but we do things without surprises and all very respectful and low key. You know, you also don't have to deal with mandatory court appearances and, you know, you're not having someone come in and order a house be sold or order custody. We use resources in a team problem solving atmosphere.
Got it. So let's say, you know, no one's filed for a divorce yet and kind of considering my options. Someone comes into your office and, you know, they know that you practice collaborative law. What do you advise them? How does the process work from that initial intake that might be different if we were to compare and contrast?
It's a really good question. Screening is very important. That's even the initial inquiry we might get by email or phone. I've had my staff go through trainings also to ask questions of clients about anything from domestic violence to, you know, do you have any concerns about safety, trust, transparency? So if a client doesn't have anything obvious where they would need immediate court protection, because we always want to look out for, is this process going to harm a client in any way? So let's say that they're still unsure and they'd like to find out more information. They can both come in together as long as, and we're talking about folks who maybe are at the beginning who haven't retained attorneys, come in together for what's called a process consult. I think that's the most useful tool, even if they're unsure, are we going to continue just being separated? You know, we just would like to know what ifs and become educated on how could we become organized and be able to come to the table when we're ready. And so we go through this process consult, and I have a couple handouts that I'm happy to share with your audience and anyone with questions about, you know, is this process right, or what are the, you know, pros and cons? And one of the common themes, I think, is if there is a mutual respect, especially when there are parents, you know, when there are children involved, is there going to be a relationship after the divorce? You know, and if so, that's even more of a reason to really try this process versus if you were to even end up in one hearing, it can create so much bad will and fear and anger that it co-parenting becomes much more difficult.
Right. And so let's say that the parents, the couple, respects each other and you say, you know what, I think this process could work for you in this circumstance. What's the next step? You know, when you go through the traditional litigated route, you see someone who's filed for papers, you get this very imposing court document and or you get served, and it can be very imposing and kind of starts off with a bang. How does that work in the collaborative world?
Well, it's a little bit tricky. This is the piece that often needs the most finesse and patience and not pressure, because often communication is at a low point in when folks are deciding, because it is such a sensitive decision to move forward with a separation or divorce. We either would involve a coach. Sometimes the family already has a therapist and they may be collaboratively trained. If not, even a financial coach or a parenting coach may broach the subject. And what we want to try to get is the parties on the same page enough to at least come together as a team to talk about, is this process? And we go through all the different pros and cons, because informed consent is very important. Same thing, if someone goes into a litigator's office, they need to know this may take a year and a half. This may cost X thousands of dollars. And I do have a concern that's not happening. I would love to have all potential parties, no matter what process they know, to be informed of the choices. Now, some counties, they do send out a letter giving choices. Oregon, we don't have that yet. So to better answer your question about what happens next is each client, and sometimes I'll meet with both initially just to talk about the difference of mediation and whether that's a good fit. Let's say they choose collaborative, then one of them can decide to work with me, or they can each pick different collaborative attorneys. And we try to give a website, a list of trained attorneys so that the clients can choose who's the best fit. They can interview a few based on geography and personality approach, because a lot of collaborative practitioners, they may have multiple pieces to their practice. And what I really think is important is that the whole team clicks together and has worked together before, so that any kinks of either, you know, communication style and trust is really there and worked out, and so that the family, everything's done efficiently, rather, for the family.
Right.
Probably didn't complete that answer well enough. So what would happen next is, after each client, let's say we have a husband and a wife, and they each meet with an attorney that they really like, then we get together in a four-way meeting. And that's called a foundation building meeting. There's a whole agenda. What I love about collaborative is there is a framework. It's not so open-ended like some mediations where you may just get into a grueling or exhausting, you know, day of negotiations. We have very specific 90-minute meetings, and you go over information sharing, goals, concerns, and there's lots of resources where the clients can do on their own to save money, filling out budgets, worksheets, and then we always encourage other professionals. I almost always work with a certified divorce financial planner. I think that's a huge benefit to provide education to the family. But does that answer your question about next steps?
It does. No, that's great.
You know, it could go on.
But it's interesting you said that there's a set process to it. or at least a structured process to it. One of the things I wanted to contrast is as you mentioned, in the mediation process, you can both show up in a conference room at 9 a.m. and have a wide-ranging and grueling discussion and not exactly end up resolving anything. And while on paper, it sounds like a good idea, in practice, it can be particularly a lot more difficult than people give it credit for at times.
It can, and there's such a variety of mediations. You know, there's anything from what we coin, I don't know who invented this name, but kitchen table settlement. And a lot of families hope to do that. That's really the least expensive, kind of most basic way to have an uncontested divorce. But what happens is sometimes if the issues are too complex, let's say with a pension or with spousal support or Medicaid, a quadro, and you know, any one of these things where they might accidentally gloss over it, not draft it properly, or not have the mediator be trained, because mediators in Oregon, at least, do not have to have any certification or licensing. You know, any one of us could just hang up a mediator shingle. So that's something to look out for. But mediation is a good tool when issues are relatively straightforward, and when both participants feel like their voices can be heard and there's no power imbalance. You know, some family dynamics where one person may be more quiet and passive, or maybe not be as sophisticated financially, and maybe they haven't gone to see someone like Sean or read your awesome book. So that if I find there's this imbalance, I always recommend collaborative process, or at least consulting with professionals, versus mediation, where they may come in and already be, I work in this high tech quarter, we have a lot of engineers, maybe two engineers that come in and they have all their spreadsheets ready, and they may just need a little bit of mediation to talk through the details, versus a homemaker I had earlier today come in, and she's been at home for 19 years, and it's just going back to actually undergrad school, whereas her husband is the breadwinner and is very sophisticated. And so in that case, we do have more support in place for example, a vocational coach, so that the homemaker can go and figure out her timeline for an earning capacity and spousal support package.
That makes a lot of sense. And so it really depends upon the situation to kind of get a sense of how you fill out the team and how to best proceed through the process. From start to finish, for collaborative divorce, what's the range that people should come to mind or be thinking about?
The time range or the cost range?
Time range.
I would say with children, probably an average of 4 months. You know, it can really depend on readiness, you know, because sometimes folks come in and it's very raw and fresh, and we take a break and pause and do some coaching. And like the vocational piece I mentioned, that can take a good maybe 8 weeks, and it's optional, of course, but that would be a good estimate for average. Now, with no children, or let's say the kids are grown up and maybe spousal support's not an issue, it could be as little as 1 to 2 months. You know, so it depends on people's schedules. I've had a couple international cases where time zones were tricky, and also cases that have taken 2 years, but completely driven by what's mutually requested. The team is always on standby. We're there as resources. And then, you know, one downside, because this isn't all, you know, it sounds good, but one thing to consider is if someone really, really doesn't want the divorce and you're worried that they could delay or stonewall, we would want to know that at the outset, and then we could really work with the participants to put them on a schedule and pre-schedule those meetings.
No, I think that makes sense. But it sounds like on average, or in general, you're not normally fighting this out for more than a year or two or something like that. It seems very efficient.
Yeah, there's been so many in the 3 month range. You know, it really, because it's about an average of, let me think, with kids, 3 meetings, without kids, maybe average of 2 full meetings, because the meetings are expensive and we prepare for them, so they're very productive. And what's really great, having collaborative attorneys in the room, we're a team, and then if a difficult issue comes up, we brainstorm it right there. So it's a very connected discussion with the clients right there, and there's no posturing, there's no, you know, going back and forth in separate rooms with highball offers and just all very transparent. Versus, you know, mediation. Some folks think, well, gosh, one mediator, that's cheaper. But if you think about the clients consulting, as they should, with separate attorneys, then you've got all of a sudden three professionals who are not connected. And that's where it can be. If I do mediation, I like to have a team of neutrals, like, say, myself, Sean, and then we've got a child specialist. And that's, I borrowed that. I credit Weavorse, a startup company nationwide, which they have a platform where you can use different professionals that are neutral. And so I think that depending on what the family's needs are, you can either do it in a collaborative team or mediation platform.
Right. I think that's great. And then do you ever have situations where collaborative divorce just, it isn't working out for a couple? And then what would happen if that were the case?
Yeah, it's really, really sad when that does happen, because sometimes everyone wants it to happen. And one of the pitfalls can be that we're trying and not getting the progress that the family needs. And so if that happens, usually the reason is either a mental health issue that was not known prior or not disclosed, or in very rare cases, it could be bad faith. Someone who was trying to use collaborative to come up with a result that was much different than court, a windfall, because there's a predictable range of outcomes. You know, while Oregon does not have a formula for spousal support, let's take a child support, an easy one, that most states have formulas. There'd be a predictable range, even with some nuances. And if someone were really wanting to use collaborative to hopefully waive that or just come out with a completely different outcome, that could be a reason where we need to terminate the process. And at any point, since it's voluntary, any one of the team members can step out. And if a client terminates it, then there's a 30-day cooling off period, which protects the family from posturing ahead of time. It gives them a month to interview a trial team, essentially, to take over. And so one of the myths is people are afraid to try collaborative because they think, well, don't I have to start all over? And that is a real falsity, because you can mutually agree to share any, say it's an appraisal, or maybe there's a financial planner that's done a lot of work with the family. Anything that you've already settled can be put in writing and enforceable. So it's just transitioning to a team that would go to an arbitrator or a trial.
Got it. And so you as the existing collaborative attorney, are you still involved, or it's kind of, that's it for you?
We leave that up to the clients. We always encourage a discussion about what would be helpful to transition. It's happened so rarely, but I'm trying to think. The last time I did help, we had documents on Dropbox that everyone agreed should be shared, because it's going to be required anyway with discovery. And so we helped the new attorneys and just had a quick conference of, here's where they left off, here's the issues that were settled, and I'll just make this up, but let's say spousal support amount was not agreed. Then they would take it from there and do whatever additional work necessary to set up a trial or arbitration.
Oh, that's interesting. So you can resolve some things in collaborative. This is the worst case that we're talking about, right? Like most of the time, 99% of the time, it sounds like it works out well. But in the event that it doesn't, you could still be 50% or 80% of the way through the case and just kind of have to deal with a few lingering issues, if that's the way things go.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and it helps the court free up their docket. It helps keep costs down because, you know, if you decided, I mean, of course, the clients have the right to decide, well, let's scrap this whole thing and I'm just going to shoot for the moon on every issue. But that usually the incentive is to keep costs down. No one wants to go to court and, you know, come out with the same result. So on issues that are really black and white, what it'll help do is limit the scope of what needs to go to a fact finder, which is the judge.
Right. And so, Tanya, this is all very helpful information. What's the best place for people to learn more and also to find out about you?
Well, I love this site. It's an international site. So no matter where members of your audience live, they can go to collaborativepractice.com. And then you can find resources for different types of professionals like the financial specialists, coaches, attorneys, mediators, and then if you need any information, even if it's not based on Oregon, I'm always happy to help, even if it's a referral. I can help someone find a good collaborative attorney. I've been to a lot of the conferences and would be happy to help handpick that. I'll give my website. It's yourpeacefulresolution, all one word, .com. And they're welcome to call. I don't charge for calls to get information, even to ask questions about process. So happy to help.
That's excellent. And I'll include links to both of those websites in the show notes for people to find. Well, Tanya, this has been very great. Thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Thank you so much, Sean. Okay, take care.
So great to hear from Tanya. You know, this process might work for you. And so if you're interested in learning more about collaborative divorce, you need to look for professionals that specifically practice collaborative divorce, the collaborative law process. Now, Tanya and I were discussing a little bit after the interview was over is that, you know, we couldn't cover everything. And there's one point that we didn't actually get into that's really relevant that I want to bring up with you afterwards, and that is that collaborative divorce can work for cases that are complicated financially. And actually, that's one of the times where it can work best, even if you have a lot of money at stake. She's worked on cases where tens of millions of dollars are at stake, and you're going through the collaborative divorce process, and it's ultimately a cheaper and much more efficient route. In fact, billionaire T. Boone Pickens, a billionaire, has a great article where he says he saved millions of dollars by going through the collaborative divorce process instead of fighting it out with his ex-wife. And the reason is that it's just more efficient, and you get to negotiate things and you get to follow the system that Tanya mentioned. And also, you know, there's areas of the traditional litigated divorce that can become very expensive quickly. Let's take a very basic example. Is almost everyone who's listening has a home, a house. And if you get an appraisal and you're litigating your divorce, well, the husband can come up with one appraisal and the other spouse, the wife or whatever the relationship is, they can come up with another appraisal. And all of a sudden, you've already spent a few thousand dollars on these appraisals, and then you're spending thousands of dollars getting a third appraisal or fighting it out and trying to determine whose value is correct. You can end up in court for these things. You can bring in experts, dueling experts in a day in court, determining how they came up with a valuation and an appraisal for the home and this and that. And all of a sudden, $10,000 later or $50,000 later, you have finally just decided the value of your home or your business or insert any asset here. And one thing the collaborative divorces can eliminate that whole process. And as Tanya said, you can end up, instead of fighting for a year or 5 years in your divorce process, be done in 2 or 3 or 4 months. So the other thing I wanted to make sure that you note after this episode is Tanya has some great resources on her website. And it's not, even if you're not in Oregon, you should really check out the resources page. She has a page that's called Forms and Handouts on the resources tab. I'm going to include a link on the show notes. So if you're on your phone or wherever else, just scroll down. You're going to see further information. It's going to be yourpeacefuldivorceresolution.com/forms-and-handouts. And she has two in particular I want to make sure that you're aware of. She has one that is awesome. It just says, what is the difference between collaborative divorce and litigation? And she has a breakdown of the different areas in ways it differs, from adversity to cost to the timing to privacy and a bunch of other things that you might not have considered. The other resource she has on her website is she has a 10-tip guide, and it's, is collaborative divorce right for you? And 10 things that you should consider that can help you determine whether or not this process will work in your specific situation. So definitely thank you so much, Tanya, for coming on to the show. Thank you all for listening. Be sure to check out the resources on there. And if you're in the position to decide whether collaborative divorce is right for your situation, then definitely check out all of those great resources. We're almost at the end of the episode, but before you go, I want to make sure that you check out some really important resources. All of them are available at divorceandyourmoney.com. When you get there, make sure you sign up for the email list, and I'll send you a set of exclusive articles, offers, and resources to help you navigate this challenging time. Also on the website, you can find out more about the coaching sessions. And as a podcast listener, hopefully you're getting a lot of great information. But here's the thing. Everyone's situation is different. Every divorce is different. You can see 10,000 divorces and 10,000 different dynamics. And while I get to help you with a lot of general tips and things that you're thinking about, there's going to come a point where you're asking to yourself, how does this apply to me? How does this specifically apply to my divorce, my situation, my spouse, my finances? And let's face it, this stuff is really complicated, and there's so many different areas where you can end up making a mistake that you might regret later down the line. And even if you already have a divorce attorney, that's awesome. And you know, I highly recommend that. But at the end of the day, attorneys are not financial specialists, and they're great at the law. They're essential to helping you negotiate a settlement, but there's a lot of errors that I see attorneys making mistakes in, financial mistakes that can affect you not just during the divorce, but even decades later. And that's where the coaching sessions come in, and I get to work with you across the United States, be it California, Texas, Ohio, Illinois, Florida, New York, and everywhere in between. Sometimes we work by phone and by email, and I also have offices in 3 states around the country, and I travel almost every week to help you depending upon what's going on. So when you're ready to get personalized help, or you're considering getting personalized help, just go to the coaching page, you'll fill out a short form, and we'll start with a no obligation introductory phone call to see if I can help you. The earlier you do it in your situation, the better, even if you're just in the beginning phases, and sometimes if you're about to sign a settlement. But I do this to help you. This is what I enjoy, and I want to work with you if I can be of assistance. And all it takes is for you to go to divorceandyourmoney.com/coaching. Also on the website, on divorceandyourmoney.com, there are some great resources. Make sure you check them out. There's courses, there's blog posts, lots of guides just to help you during this time. And if you haven't already, subscribe to the show. That way you'll automatically be updated with new episodes. And make sure you check out over 100 past episodes on just about every topic imaginable. If you're on iTunes, leave a review, a 5-star review preferably, to help other people discover this show. I'm your host, Sean Lehman, MBA and Certified Divorce Financial Analyst. Thank you for listening.